So,
Oh, who is this? Coop, is that you?
it is me. Yeah, I'm here, man. Give me a minute.
Welcome to the Streak of Lean. God, how long has it been? I'll answer that. It's been over a year. No. Yeah, it's gotta have been. Or maybe, did we do one maybe? Did we do one last summer, possibly?
I think
Hard to remember.
the last one I remember doing, I was potting cactus plants. That's the, and I think that was probably May or June, and we were talking about trying to plant organic peanuts here in Sumter County.
Did you do that?
No, we did not do that.
Did you did something though? What I mean, what let's just jump right in. What have you been up to?
I'm sorry. So I'm just gonna say this real quick. I don't really understand what's going on with this mic. It won't let
Is
me
it?
into the phone. So we're just gonna go with this and assume that everything's cool.
I can hear you. Is it telling you it wants access to your microphone? On your
All it is doing is accessing the microphone. Like, it won't let me put it up to my ear and listen to you. I have to.
Oh yeah, that's what mine used to do. So that's right. So you got to put it on speaker and like hold it out in front of you. Mine used to do this.
That's right. Okay. Well, hey, we'll make it work. It's just
It's
that it
very
was not what I
weird.
was expecting. So when we started talking, I'm kind of like fumbling within my hands.
That's cool.
Okay. Anyways, I know what an exciting start. So we rented 80 acres last year here in Sumter County, and the plan was that we would carve out about 10 acres and put organic peanuts in it. And then we had a market for the peanuts, and we wanted to go ahead and get started as beginning farmers. And my wife Perry is also would technically qualify for some beginning farmer programs at USDA, considering her age and experience. So we were really excited to get started and get the clock started with being a beginning farmer and potentially take advantage of some of the stuff that USDA offered, and then also, you know, fulfill a lifelong dream of growing peanuts. On a very, very small scale, but still growing peanuts. And we suffered from some of the issues that beginning farmers have that no one's quite tackled yet, even though there's a lot of folks and organizations and USDA staff who say that we've got it all figured out. But we had a lack of resources and network to be able to pull it off. So we rented 80 acres at a great price. We burned it all off, which was super exciting and fun, even though we were a little late.
Oh yes, the burn that we
Well,
did have an episode when you burned.
that's right.
Okay.
We burned my landlord's longleaf, which was really fun. And then we burned the field because it was covered in Texas millet. And we probably burned a little late, so the millet had already hit the ground. We still burned it, and we burned into the swamp. And then that was really a fun day. And then we started looking for folks to do some work for us around here since we don't own a tractor. And surely we could find somebody to do some kind of custom equipment work. And we could not. I mean, the answer was yes and no. So we bought peanut seed, 1,500 pounds of peanut seed from Cordell, and we put them in our basement. And then we found our neighbor who was planting conventional peanuts next to us, a black guy named Noble. He
That's a
came
good
over,
name.
a
I like
great
that
name.
name.
Yeah, great, great. Yeah, Noble. And he harrowed up the land a couple times. We got him to harrow everything up, trying to just work on the weed seed organically, continuing if we could try to get it, you know, turned over again and again during the year
Hold
before.
on and hang on. Pronounce that again because you
Harrow?
pronounced it totally perfect. When
I
you
mean,
use a harrow, what are you doing?
harrowing the land?
Hair. You said hair. I love it.
All right. So anyway, he did that, and then we got him to work over the land that we were actually going to produce on a bunch of times, maybe three or four times. But then when it came down to, oh, and we bought, I don't think, a ton of chicken litter as well and had it dumped on the farm. And then we could not find anybody to plant. And we talk to everybody, but we don't have a planner. And the last thing we're going to do is buy a tractor and all the, you know, implements, considering we don't own the land, right? It's our first year. There's no way that we'd be that heavily invested, not knowing what we were doing. And we talked to, you know, we called the USDA office, we went to the extension office, we talked to the Chamber of Commerce, we put an ad in the market bulletin. We tried everything we knew, and we could not find anybody. And some of it was because last year was kind of an exceptionally cool year, especially in the spring. And everybody got behind harvesting their wheat. So nobody was really available to plant our peanuts. And then some of it is just being new, entirely new to the community. Neither of us are from Sumter County. And so we don't have any connections here. And we don't have, you know, we live in town, so we don't have any neighbors we can call on. And we just didn't have the resources to be able to draw upon to be able to plant the peanuts. I would say that, you know, I mean, we also had crop insurance, too. I mean, we went through everything we were supposed to do. And actually, all that part, all the stuff of working in the USDA that people get scared about was super easy. I mean, it was the easiest part of it all. I would say there were two upshots of the whole process. One is that, well, we would have lost the crop anyway. It was so wet last year. Sumter County, I think I would put Sumter County up with any other place in Georgia as the wettest place in the state over last year. You know, we're having some people here are having honest conversations that we're turning into a rainforest. And I think it's just also like we're in an interesting spot, like kind of in the southwest portion of the state where we hit rain that comes out of the north, like into North Georgia, and we get rain that comes out of the Gulf. I mean, it rained here all the time. And when it rains, you cannot cultivate and get on top of your weeds, and you lose your crop, your organic crop, to weeds. And so we would have lost that crop knowing that we didn't have a tractor. We wouldn't be able to cultivate when we needed to. And then, of course, how would we have dug the peanuts? I mean, also not having a tractor, not have equipment. So it was a real disappointing thing overall. I mean, we continued to go out there a couple times, but it got to be just a reminder of a failure, at least especially for my wife, Perry. For me, it was a little more fun just because it was going out to, you know, 80 acres that you had access to and you could kind of bounce around on. And there was a swamp. I'd say the second part is that while it was awkward to go out there and slightly disappointing because of our failure, and it was awkward because our landlord had bought this piece of property that was 80 acres, but there was a house in the center of it that was still owned by the family. And it was a place where they would have it was just a little cinder block building, but there would be little family reunions there every once in a while around holidays. So it was weird sometimes to drive in and there'd be a bunch of people in the middle of the property looking at you. And you'd be like, hey, what's up? But the thing about it, the part about it that I look back with fondness and then am excited about the future is that, you know, I'm just like a plant nut, and especially a native plant nut. I'm really kind of like an animal and plant and living creature nut. And I would rather be outside around plants and animals than I would rather be inside in front of a computer or a screen. And I spent a lot of that time when we go out there walking through the swamp trying to dig up native plants. And so if my dreams come true, I'm going to have a native plant nursery in the next 2 to 3 years. And I got some things out there that I'm really excited about that I've never seen before. Like I've never seen this plant called, I call it Swamp Titty, but I think it's called Swamp Tie-Tie.
Okay, I like this.
But it's a really, really beautiful tree. I kind of, to me, when I saw it out there, the bark kind of reminded me of like rhododendron. But it starts off kind of as a bush and then becomes maybe a mid-sized tree. It likes its feet wet, but has a really beautiful, like, droopy white flower that the bees love. And then supposedly it'll have a really good color in the fall. But I dug up some of that and transplanted to my yard and trying to see what it does. I got a good elderflower that has taken off that I may regret bringing it into my yard because it is crazy what it's done this year, but it will flower this year. And then I just got, you know, some other great things, beautyberry. I picked up a couple button bushes and I think they died back originally, but they're coming back this year. So you know, wasn't all a loss, but our 2021 farming experience was returned zero. It's far dollar wise.
Yeah, but experience. I mean, that's farming, right? Like, you got to do it wrong once.
Well, you got to learn what you can and can't do. And you know, you set expectations.
Like, for sure. Like, you can't, to expect that you just come out the gate. Like, that's what everybody thinks. Like, oh, you know, I'm going to go get pigs, you know, and do this. And, you know, and you don't really like, you just, you know, you're not a crafty veteran yet.
Well, you know, we thought we were also making a pretty good bet on how we were doing it. We're doing it small. We limited our size. You know, we knew how much money we wanted to spend, and we didn't exceed that at all. And we thought also by hiring custom work that we would not be, we wouldn't be overextended. It would be a really smart way to dip your toes into it.
Yes. Until
the rain. But also, you know, I always go back with this with my other work, where I'm involved in all these programs, the USDA and other nonprofits and other organizations talking about beginning farmers, new farmers. We got to get new farmers. And I'll see some projects sometime that come up to USDA for grant funding, and it'll say, you know, over this 3-year project, we're going to create 130 new refugee farmers in Buffalo who will be making, you know, $10,000 to $15,000 a year selling cabbage. I went a little more too specific than that, but I seriously, it's like refugee farmers outside of Buffalo, and there's going to be 150 we'll make in 3 years. And, you know, bullshit.
Oh, so many people tried farming and style. You got to be a certain level of stupid and insane to continue doing it at some point. Wouldn't you agree?
Because it'll
chew up like it. God, if you become married to it, it will. I love it, but damn, it'll eat every holiday. It'll affect every relationship you have.
Yes. I mean, especially if you have livestock. And I would say the one lesson I would give to everybody is who wants to farm is the best way to farm is to have family money.
Family money, or just really get off on like the challenge of, family money would be fun, but then God, that's a lot of pressure too, Coop. I mean, imagine if you're farming on family land. That's where you get the agriculture suicides, because imagine if you inherit property that's been in your family for forever, right? Everybody's made it. Everybody's at least hung on to this property, you know, and then you're the one that you end up losing it. Like that could drive you, I think, to drive somebody to end it. You know what I'm saying?
I do, but I'm talking
a lot of pressure.
Family money that has no pressure. I'm talking about family money that has a house a beach house and maybe a mountain house. Family money that, you know, that's the kind of what I'm talking about.
Maybe like a trust fund situation.
I'm talking about if property's been in the farm, you know, the family for a long time, there's investments, there's no chance whatsoever, and you could run through the dollars and, you know, and not have to worry about it. That's fun.
That would be awesome. The fun we'll have just completely hemorrhaging this money and knowing that it's not going to run out. It's never going to run out. That would be an agricultural wet dream.
Well, you know, did you hear about the farmer that won the $20 million in the lottery?
No.
He said he was going to keep farming until the money ran out.
Yes, I totally can identify with that. It is, man. It gets in your blood, and you'll chase it. You'll chase it like it's like chasing the dragon, baby. You know, people that don't do it don't understand that. But once it's in you, like you'll pretty much, like at least from my own personal experience, I've chased it. You know, like you're just not gonna let it go.
Well, so this is where we are now this year. We are not farming in Sumter County this year, and we let the lease go back, and we hated to do it because it had been fallow for a couple of years, and so it was ready to be certified organic last year. And the landowner almost leased it to Noble, who wanted to continue to farm it organically because he thought he could get a pretty good insurance payment out on it. But you know, I didn't know if he knew what he was doing. He would take a lot of hand holding to go through the process, and we just didn't have that capacity. Instead, what's going on this year is that Perry's grandfather has 100 acres about 30 miles north of Opelika in Alabama. And okay.
Which is near Auburn.
Yeah, yeah, it's 30 minutes. I mean, it's as a Georgia fan and grad, it's an odd place to be for sure, because everybody there is – they're drinking the Auburn Kool-Aid pretty hard.
Which is some bitter-tasting Kool-Aid the past few years. But, I mean, it's pretty country, right, Coop?
You know, it is and it isn't. It's hilly and it is worked over red clay. It is not as to me, as far as just the quality of the woods and the soil, it's much inferior to anything I've seen in Georgia. Much inferior. I mean, when you go up to the family farm up in Hall County, you know, there are some parts that kind of remind you of it, but it's a pretty rich diversity of hardwoods in the pastures and then the lane.
You know, I hang on before you keep going. I want to hear all about that. What was the story, the milkman or the egg guy at your family farm when you were a kid? Well, there's some great story about that milkman or something, wasn't it?
Well, there's
a woman involved a woman's breast, I think.
Well, that's right. Well, Nancy picked up eggs. She had an affair with the egg truck driver.
Wait. Nancy was who?
Oh, man. Bill and Nancy.
I want to get into it. She used to come and get eggs or something?
No, Bill and Nancy lived on the farm. They were the chicken family. I mean, we would have folks who lived on our farm.
Yes. Okay. You know, they managed the chicken houses.
That's right. We gave them a house and, you know, an income and they just, all they had to do, speaking of which you're talking about, is that they lived on the farm. So if something happened with the chickens
is generally, that's pretty much standard practice, wouldn't you say, of people that have broiler houses, that they generally, or a lot of them have somebody that gets sort of like a caretaker that lives there, like in a single wide or something.
That's right. And we have we had heavy breeds, just to clarify. And but it's
you had what?
We had heavy breed hens.
Oh, okay.
So our chickens were fertilized. And we had roosters, and then those eggs would hatch out and become broilers.
I say.
So we had our chickens for a year, as opposed to a broiler house, which meant a lot more litter, a lot more manure. But, you know, it happens. This one of the reasons that you have to have somebody nearby is because, you know, it gets 100 degrees in Georgia and the power goes out. With the air conditioning unit, or the air conditioning unit, but with the cooling system at the chicken house, you could have 15,000 chickens die.
Easy. There's few things on earth that will own your soul like raising chickens in mass. Right, because there's so many things can happen. So, you know, it's just such a fragile thing. Like, so many things can happen, and if they do, it's like quickly catastrophic.
Yeah, and yeah.
Where you're like, put it in perspective for people that don't realize. Like, we're not talking about like 50 hens here. We're talking about like what, Coop, like 30,000-40,000.
Well, not in all one barn and one, you know.
Well,
house.
Sure. Yeah. But say in those days, 10,000 in one house.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So you figure 10,000 dead birds that you're going to be responsible for if they die inside that house. It's not like somebody's going to come out and be like, okay, well, you got to go put them over here, Bobby. Like, you're going to be the person that has to go in there with a bulldozer and push them out into a pit.
My dad, he made money just burying animals, and he had to bury a bunch of chickens that had smothered to death at a farm, I think, in East Hall. But, you know, they smother. And the other thing you don't think about chicken house is that it's the whole situation is very flammable.
Totally. It's very dry.
Yeah. A lot of feathers.
Feathers and dander.
If you get a fire near it, it is a terrifying situation. And Nancy actually started Nancy and Bill, not to digress, but, you know, Bill's grandmothers were sisters. He was a Davenport out of South Carolina. And His grandmothers were sisters.
Wait a second. Let me think about that.
So, yeah.
Does that make him inbred?
Yes, it makes him inbred. Yes.
I mean, like, highly inbred, right?
Huh?
That makes him, like, highly inbred?
He, like, there's no doubt he's inbred. He always had a little booger hanging out of his nose that was kind of stuck there.
What kind of booger are we talking about? Like one that, like, whistles and blows in and out like a party favor? Or like a booger?
That's really...
Was it black? Was it black from chicken dust?
Yeah. You know, I always think of him as being more, more dusty dust, like kind of a white yellowish dust. But
well, sure. But you know how to turn your boogers like black if you're up in there.
Yeah. No, it's been a long time, Brandon. I don't remember. I don't lie about what the color of the booger was.
I bet you if you saw it, you'd be like, "Damn, I remember this. Like it was yesterday." Oh, that's classic. That's great. The one thing, the two things that you did, two details about this guy that you've given me is his grandmother's sisters, and he had a 24/7 boogie. This is great. I want to meet this guy.
Well, Nancy was really smart, and Nancy got tired of him, and so then she was looking for, how monkeys, there's some people say that they have relationships where like they're like a monkey. They won't let go of the branch they've got until they hold on to another branch.
That's right.
And so she was looking for another branch. And William, who was a nice kind of guy, beefy, I guess he was good looking. And he'd come in at 5:30 in the morning and pick up eggs. And he started coming in, and she would stand at the front window and take her top off. And she was, I guess, well and down there. And that started, it commenced to start a fire. They got together, and then William moved down there, and Bill did not move out.
Oh, what do you mean he didn't move out? Like he stayed?
Bill had a buddy named Bubba who lived in an RV in the carport next to the trailer.
Okay. He worked
at NC Marble up on Dawsonville Highway along the lake. And I think Bill moved in with Bubba in the RV, and Nancy moved into the trailer.
And everybody was cool. Like, it was just like, well, we're staying. Like,
well, Nancy's mother, sister, brother, and then her kid lived in the trailer, and all of them were mentally challenged, except for Felicia. Her child, Felicia, Phylicia, Felicia.
I like that.
But her other family, Nancy was the only one who wasn't mentally slow, and her eyes weren't goggly or googly.
Man, this is really giving like chicken workers a bad name. You know, Shannon and Sterling Sharp grew up working chicken houses in Tatnall.
I believe it. Here's the deal.
Answer me this. Do you ever see people, shortcomings be what they might, you know what I'm saying? Do you ever see chicken people like that? They don't ever get sick. They don't ever sick. They won't get like viruses and shit like that. Like, they're not going to catch the flu or some bullshit. If they do, it's going to be like really minor, because all the shit you're breathing in is so good for you. I mean, I'm not bullshitting. It's like you want to mainline that shit.
No, I mean, they're going to have other, problems from drinking and abuse.
Sure, like the weight of poverty.
Right, right.
And William's not always going to be staring at her tits as he's, to get eggs or whatever he was doing. What was he doing? What was he coming there for?
Egg truck driver. He could be coming to pick up eggs in the morning.
Oh, yes, yes. Was he younger? Was he younger or the same age?
Not the same age. I had thought about William in a long time.
He was kind of a strapping, good-looking guy.
Yeah, he had to load eggs. I mean, he was,
Not bad.
And he had a lot more going for him than Bill did. So,
didn't have a booger hanging out of his nose all the time.
And Nancy was sharp. Nancy was somebody who wasn't given anything to start with her life, but she was a hard worker and really smart, and was fighting against her circumstance.
Sure, which is admirable. I mean, it's in no way are we like coming down on people that. work chicken houses or other similar type jobs. You know what I'm saying? Not what we're doing. This is a portrait of specific people only because I remembered the something about this.
No, look, I mean, it's interesting to think about, I mean, it's one of the issues obviously with, a food system that works like this, right, is that, yeah, you get food real cheap and it's efficient, but also, it requires cheap labor at the same time. And when it's not, when it's not from potentially under the table immigrant labor, or people who aren't getting paid a fair amount, it's for poor people who are also kind of under the table and,
living totally on the fringes,
living on the front, right, and who don't have the opportunity because they are illiterate, because they have, they come from circumstances that do not equip them with opportunities to take advantage of the world. That's right. For us in where we were, I mean, I would say it's funny because right now you say we're Metro Atlanta at this point in time, but I would say we were
back then that was old hall.
I'd say we were Appalachia, to be honest with you. I
completely would agree with that. That was back in the day when you would go to Lake Lanier and like Buford was still a really quaint small town that felt like it was forever away.
Yeah. I mean, we never had Lake Lanier didn't exist as far as we knew. We never even saw it. We were on the other side of the county and farming. So
you were near East, you were in East Hall.
We were Southeast, man. East Hall. We don't associate with East Hall, bro.
Well, there was a good running back for East Hall back in the day named Mitchell Grant that played because Loganville was sort of the same. You would drive through Loganville back in the day and there was nothing in Loganville. There was like a Dairy Queen and a gas station,
Yeah.
But then my dad, when he first started coaching out there, he said, it's, God, what did he say? It's a quote from Hoosiers. But anyways, there was a running back for East Hall. And I remember going to games and the East Hall, their chant was, they would say East Hall, but they made it sound like a donkey. They'd go East Hall, East Hall. I swear to God. And this dude, I think he ended up having, I don't know what happened to him. I think he had some issues, but he went to Miami, University of Miami, but he torched him for all E-Hall, but go ahead.
East Hall used to have some players. I mean, basketball players.
Oh, yeah.
There's two. But then the school was never good. It was like East Hall was kind of pretty over there, but it was rough, and everybody knew it.
It was fairly rough, and more, wouldn't you say, more black folks in East Hall than other parts of Hall County back then?
Yeah, but I mean, there was never a lot. It just, I don't know I would not have picked East Hall as a place where there would be a larger black population.
Or maybe the larger black population would be in Gainesville proper.
That's right.
The Red Elephants.
That's right. My father as a Red Elephant. We had in South Hall and where we were practically zero. I mean,
what was the high school in South Hall?
Well, it was Johnson was the big one until it started.
Oh, yes.
You know Johnson?
They always have a great soccer team.
Oh, now, man. Oh, bro. When Latinos started coming into Gainesville for the chicken plants.
Yes.
Soccer got really good.
Johnson soccer is always really, really good.
Yeah. Yeah. Johnson Knights. Is that right? I don't remember that.
I don't know what their mascot is, but they always say Johnson Gainesville.
Well, now, I mean, when I go up there now, there are so many high schools, I don't even know the names of them.
It's a different place. But back when you were growing up, it was still really, really rural.
Oh, yeah. Johnson was kind of rough, too. I mean, I remember when I go there, because I didn't go to high school there, but my cousins, and I would think, like, this is like going back in time. But, hey, the last thing I was just going to say, I mean, I would like to go back to Alabama.
Well, hold on, before you move, the Appalachia thing of thinking of
that.
Of Hall County, like Appalachia. I mean, that's staggering, but go ahead.
Well, no, it's like I say that because there was grinding poverty there. And there would especially, you would get, go, it's not a very, I wouldn't say it's mountainous, but it's very, very hilly. And you would go around a turn through a bunch of trees, be driving and be a nice, all of a sudden you go down through a winding turn and get to a little bottom area of a cove or something. Seriously, and like they would just, it would be that kind of poverty I saw last time I was. I remember seeing in East Tennessee a few years ago where you see it here. Let me just take a step back because I'm going to say Appalachia, but I'm going to even like digress farther. I still see it, especially now in Southwest Georgia, but it's where you get to a trailer, you get to a house, and like you can't understand how the folks even move through their yard. There's so much junk around, it's almost like it's like trash to the point of mental illness.
Yes.
You know what I'm talking about? And you're like,
oh, yeah, 100%.
Yeah. I saw it over near Indian societies, like land, between Jacksonville and I don't know, Lumber City or something. There's that road there where I thought that's that there's a spot there right across from the Indigo Snake.
Going out towards Glenwood and stuff.
Yeah, kind of that way, but it's the road that's just south of the Okmulgee, and it tracks along it until you go to Lumber City, but it is, there's a little spot there where you're like, geez, Louise. I mean, you know, like that is, hey, you forget that this exists. A little middle-class bubble.
Yeah. Almost where you'd think, yeah, there's totally places like that around here. Easily places like that around the farm, you know, where you're like, there's trailers on some of those dirt roads where you're like, damn, does somebody
there? Right. I mean,
and the windows are plastered with foil, you know, and there's, but they always got a four wheeler, you know, it's like,
yeah.
It's poor as shit up in there, but there's total four. There's a, you'll see little kids. It's like five. I saw a little kid that couldn't have been five or six riding a three wheeler, a gas powered three wheeler. I was thinking, damn. Like that, damn, this is a real throwback. The three wheeler.
I haven't seen a three wheeler in a long time.
I was thinking, didn't they make those fuckers illegal?
Yeah, they are. They're so dangerous, man. You're not allowed to try.
Especially if you're like six. He was crushing the ditch, too. He was hauling ass. I was like, damn.
We had our farm folks, like, I can tell stories forever of like, it's some of it's kind of quaint and funny to tell about like this just, you know, roster of interesting people who worked on the farm. I mean, there's one guy who swore that Jeffrey Dahmer tried to pick him up in Wisconsin at a truck stop cafe. It was on and on like that, but it's also really sad. And by the end of it, some of our last folks who worked for us, like talking about like rural Appalachia, is that like this group of kind of really low class white, I mean, really dirt poor white people. They were, you know, Hall County became more gentrified and like they were not as present. And then when, you know, to find folks working the chicken farm, the last folks we had were from Macon County or Franklin, or they're from Franklin, North Carolina. And like, you know, they were like, we really were getting like traditional Appalachia, as you think about it. You know, didn't have to, still couldn't read, thought that Asheville was a bigger city than Atlanta.
Yeah. 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 And they're like out of that happened in Walton too. People are like just totally out of place, forgotten, right? Yeah. Time, yeah. The county changes and you're just like, you know, I guess you're just kind of like out of place. Like you got no place anymore.
Well, I think it's always a good reminder, not to, as much as things were better back in the old days, which I think a lot of ways they were, don't romanticize the poverty too much. Or don't romanticize poverty, you know, just realize that like, yeah, there might've been some feelings that we had, maybe more tight knit communities. Maybe we didn't waste so much time on being, I don't know, having anxieties and self-reflective so much, but at the same time, like let's not romanticize people who are, you know, that the actual feeling of not having anything.
Sure. Well, definitely. Well, you can go to Brantley, you know, nothing. Brantley's cool. But you know, there's parts of it where you're like neck, like having a tattoo on your neck is like you go in a gas station. It's like, man, there's like a lot of neck tattoos in here. Like I don't have a neck tattoo and I feel kind of like out of place. The thing I like about Brantley is the people sort of have a mentality of like, they sort of want to be left alone. And so, you know, you can essentially be left alone, but it's sort of like that. It's in South Georgia. It's very, very, very white, which is weird for South Georgia.
Yeah.
And, you know, like I jokingly take pictures of the Coke machine up there at the Satilla grocery to, you know, be funny on Instagram, and pictures of the ads that people put up there. And there was like one time there was a crumpled up receipt that had gotten like uncrumpled, you know, you could tell that like, this was a receipt like in this guy's pocket apparently. And he straightened it out and then wrote a car for sale on it. And it was like, you could hardly read it. And I was like, and then there was another one, this girl selling, I guessing it was a girl. In my mind, it had to be a girl, but I posted it in a story on Instagram. It was pointed out to me that it could easily be a guy, which it could be. But the ad was selling tomato and strawberry transplants. And the email address was bootypie@yahoo.com. And this was on the Coke machine. And I was walking in to get some like bread or something. And I was looking, I was like, oh, cool, strawberry plants and tomatoes. And then I looked down and it said bootypie@yahoo.com. And I was like, oh my God, like imagine the odds of getting that name on Yahoo of all things.
This is not a paid endorsement, but for Booty Pie.
If you want vegetable transplants and you want to, I don't know what this person has, you know, currently. I want to say I looked at the ads last night or the night before, and it was no longer up there. But you could always email bootypie@yahoo.com, see if there's a list of availability or whatever, and tell her that Streakaline or him.
Yeah, right, him.
Streakaline sent you.
I mean, I think it's for a good time, email bootypie@yahoo.com. I mean, I don't think you'll be disappointed, whatever, even if he or she is out of tomato and strawberry starts.
The very least, you could talk about great email handles. I was dying to see what Booty Pie looked like, just out of curiosity.
And well, you know. I mean, I think you should email. I think this should be, maybe this will be our segment for next time. I think between now and the next recording, you need to email Booty Pie and just say, hey.
Do a little recon.
I mean, get curious, do you have any more starch? And then if things go well, we can invite Booty Pie on the podcast at some point in time. Well,
that would be a dream. I'll have to post that picture on the Instagram too of the, I'll email Booty Pie and then I'll post that picture. Cause there was some other funny ones too. It was like the crumpled up receipt and then Booty Pie. God, I can't remember the other ones, but there was some good ones where it was like, man, this is America right here. But you know, I mean, Brantley's like, you know, nothing against Brantley. It's just, it struggles against the weight of poverty. And so does places like Tattnall. I mean, Reedsville, if you go in the little neighborhoods that are down by the, you know, quote, down by the river where Chris Farley would have lived on that Saturday Night Live skit. But you could go to,
kids out there.
Yeah. In a van down by the river, you know, but I'm talking picturesque, beautiful sections of the Ohoopee. Just down these dirt roads, but you're way out in the county. You're so far away from Reedsville or anywhere. And it's beautiful, but there's total neighborhoods down there that are there's some trailers that you'd, and it's close to the water, but you'd be like, damn, like there's no way somebody lives there. And sure enough, they do.
Well, I always had a bias against trailers because we rented some trailers and it'd be amazing how people would live. We'd have to clean them out. I mean, you just couldn't believe that people would decide to live like this. And then,
well, they're always falling apart too. I would totally live in, I feel the opposite. I loved living in a single wide, but they're like a boat. They're perpetually in a state of falling apart.
Well, man, dude, we had some, I mean, look, like the most terrifying thing and one thing I learned that was different between North Georgia and South Georgia, and I don't know if it's changed, is that the trailers in Hall County, trailer parks, were places you never wanted to go around.
Never. We used to buy weed at a trailer park in Atlanta city limits on Jonesboro Road, and it was rough. It's like type thing where you roll your window down and throw $10 like to get a dime bag, and you're like just glad to get out of there alive as a teenager.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, this is where you're stereotyping, whatever you want to call it, but I'm gonna step outside for a second. But if you if your generator went missing, I can tell you where you could find it, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, growing up in Metro Atlanta and in Lithonia, the trailer parks was, you know, it's kind of like the movie 8 Mile. Like that was, you know, like the trailer park was like, oh, he lives in the trailer park. You know, not that you would make fun of that, but, you know, you sort of assume that it was rougher. There are a lot more trailers, you know, down here. Not so many trailer parks necessarily.
Right, right.
you know, but there are some. There are some, though, and they're still pretty rough looking, don't you think?
You know, I don't see as many as I used to. They used to be all so huddled up there. I'm sorry. I got the rain's about to come, so I got to roll my window up.
Damn, is it going to rain up there? It hadn't rained here in forever.
Yeah, I think we're going to get a little shower out of all this. And then it looks like it's going to be raining 3 days. Like,
really?
If it is like 50% chance is the new 100 in America's.
Y'all do get a lot of rain.
25 is the new 50. Yeah, man. We got, I mean, we had two major floods last year. The trailer park thing, I mean, I don't have a very good theory about South Georgia trailer parks. I just knew that once I got to South Georgia, the trailers I felt different about trailers. It was just a different kind of modality of living that it was not as scary and threatening as it seemed to be in Hall County.
Yeah, I agree with that. Like, certain connotation, but I certainly loved living in that one in Reidsville. It was awesome. The thing I loved about it was that you could heat it up or cool it down. It was like a little tin can. It was so, it was instantaneous, and it would get so cold in there, like almost cold, like when you're a kid and you go on vacation to the beach or something and you come back in the hotel and it's like the AC just cranks. It gets super cold. It was like that. It was wonderful. And then in the winter, you know, you could take a hot shower and then just crank the heat. And it was like, man, this is, other than the fact that there was mice running around, you know, and falling apart, you know, not bad mice, but there was, you know, it was an old trailer and it was constantly felt like sort of falling apart.
Yeah.
And you'd be watching TV and a little fucking mouse would scurry across the floor and you're like, fuck.
I understand mice. This is our first year since we bought our house that we have not been fighting mice.
they're bastards too.
Yeah. And we ended up getting a cat too. And I think it was a combination of having all the cons for the last couple of years or last 2020. And then I think maybe the cats putting the final touch on it, the coup de grace.
That's right.
And speaking of trailers, though, that circles back to Alabama. So we're buying a single wide.
Oh, nice. Are you going to move there?
Nah, not yet. But we're going to buy her grandfather. Perry's grandfather is going to sell his 100 acres because he's just too old to keep up with it. And nobody else really knows what to do with it. So we're going, Perry and her mother and I have formed a company, and we're going to buy the 100 acres as a single wide on it. And we are going to, we don't have a real great idea as far as and probably that's not our passion right now. Our passion is more just to kind of love on the land, you know, and like get it to where it needs to be. I mean, it's been kind of ignored because no one could look after it. And so the pine trees are taken back over the pasture. I mean, it's full of sweet gum and pine trees and a lot of locusts too. I mean, it's just every thorn you can imagine is there. Calorie pear, all the Bradford pears have gone wild back to calorie pears and they're taking over. So we're really excited. It's got a pond. It's got two ponds on it. I think it's got a lot of water on it that's untapped. It's got a couple streams, very hilly, but we're really excited about trying to get it into a place that's maximum biological proficiency and diversity. And I've already found some cool plants out there. There's a really neat red buckeye that comes up, has a really nice spring flower. So I'm working on getting that propagated. And then we were given 8 goats. We don't own the land yet, but we were given 8 goats. And so I went and picked up two, three weeks ago.
Damn, you got given goats?
Yeah. Yes, that's right.
Wow, that's great.
Well, they were, two of the goats came from, I think were from there, and they went to this man, Mr. Bill Farrington, who I think graduated as, he was like an ag professor at University of Florida. He's retired up there, and those goats became 8 goats, and then they got into his brother's camellias, and his brother said he wanted the goats off the property. So he's given the goats back to us, and all he wants is for us to get, is if we can have some offspring in the future, and then we'll you know, return the favor. But we've got 8 goats out there working on the thorns and the privet and the pines and everything else you can imagine. Just hopefully they're not, we were out there last weekend, they're not eating fast enough. Like there's the land is exceeding their ability to consume it. But we're gonna work them. We're gonna work them. And right now, I'd like to get two donkeys.
Maybe some Piney Woods cows.
My thing about the cows right now is I'm not looking to sell cows. I'm not looking to deal with a Piney Woods cow is not that big, but I don't need a big animal to mess mm-hmm. around with.
But they'll eat all that scrub, you know, the Piney Woods will.
Well, I'm looking for something that's pretty self-sufficient and I need something that'll complement the grazing that the goats are doing. And what's also nice about it is that it's been set up into four or five paddocks, and that each of them has water. Three of them have irrigation. I have water running to little like stations that the NRCS helped put in, and the other ones have springs coming out of it. So like you could do a rotational thing going on. There's also a nice little goat barn.
You could really turn a nifty little profit with goats.
Oh, I think so. I think I've got all kinds of ideas. You know, we're going to try to cut all the scrub pine and put in longleaf, and we'll probably try to set up some kind of, you know, maybe some pine straw in the long-term future. I think we make some money on goats. I'm going to put some bees out there, get my landscaping together. It's right near Lake Martin. So all these folks out of Birmingham and Montgomery and Auburn have lake houses. So they need landscape plants, especially native landscape plants like oak leaf hydrangeas.
That's cool. And, that's the state flower, I think, about, or is that the camellia of Alabama? One of them.
I don't know. I'm on the fence on this whole Alabama thing. I mean,
or is the yellowhammer? I bet it's the yellowhammer. Is that a bird?
I think it's a bird. I'm not sure.
Rammer jam or yellowhammer.
I the best thing that ever came out of Alabama was I-20. So I'm.
But we threw the yoke off. So. We don't got to worry about going to Alabama anymore, Coop.
The nice thing about Alabama, it's not even football, dude. It's just the fact that it's Alabama, and I'm through. But it does, going over there, it does remind me, as far as just the population density and the ruralness of it, of what, Hall County was 10, 15 years ago. And I have no doubt in 10, 15 years with the growth of Auburn and Birmingham that it won't look like that, and so it's a good investment in those terms. I would love, you know,
a little nostalgia for you.
It's not nostalgia. I just don't want to be around people.
Well, sure.
Seriously, like the fewer people in my life, the better.
Like, how far are you from Opelika? Like a half 30 hour?
Minutes. Yeah, 30 minutes.
And that's a fun town to say.
Yeah, sure it is.
They
have a real big commercial development with a Kroger and a Target and all that stuff. They call it Tiger Town.
Yeah. When I was in rehab way back in the day, there was a kid in there for pills from Opelika. James was his name. This is way back. I don't know how I remember his name, but back in like 05.
All right, Brandon. So that's my little farm update. You tell me now. What's going on with you, bud?
I enjoyed hearing all that. I think that's fantastic. I'm really happy for you too. And I think that the failing, you know, the peanut thing, like that's just part of it, right?
Right. That's right.
You know, like Perry can beat her, you know, I'm sure she took it hard, you know, and a lot of times you do, you know, you fail wildly, you know, but that's in farming. You roll the dice and you fail. And, you know, and sometimes you take it hard. You know, the important thing is that you get back on that horse and keep going. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I totally do. Yeah, don't give up. I mean,
because you're going to fail. It's going to dash your hopes so many times throughout your life if you stick with it. You know, it's a real bastard of an occupation to even just find that. It took me probably 10 years to find that rhythm to where I can sort of like feel it in my bones, like when something like I can kind of sense what's about to happen, or you know, this, and it's still there's things that, you know, happen. It's largely dependent on variables that are completely out of your control, like being way too wet.
Well, I'd also say is that without the full arsenal of chemicals and everything else that your modern farmer has, that you need to spend some time with land. You're not going to do anything right away. You know, you can make a difference, really make a difference with land and animals and the whole overall productivity, but it's not a year investment.
No, well, I like the thought of like getting this piece of property and then just kind of getting to know it, you know, that's the thing, like, you know, spending some time there, seeing it through the seasons, how it changes. What happens in the summer is going to be different than what happens in the winter, you know, and really like loving it. Like, that's sort of what I've developed is, I was thinking about that actually the other day. I used to have the mentality of like, you almost like squeeze a living or like wrestle it out, you know, like a fight, like this is a fight, you know, it's a dog fight. I got to wrestle, I'm squeezing, just wrestling a living out of this. But lately, maybe I'm just getting older or whatever, but I think it's just that I've been at it long enough that I realize now it's not a wrestling match. It's more of a
caress.
Yeah. You hate to say making love, but it's sort of like that. It's like a caress. It's like it's a lifelong process of getting to know something that you're tied to. And you constantly get to know things deeper and in more meaningful ways, like and so when you look at it like that, the things that used to drive you nuts, like for example, Waverly, when it rains, it's really, really wet and really like just muddy for a long time. But when you look at it through the lens of like I'm in love with this piece of property in this region, and you know, so those sort of liabilities become things like, you can even sort of see the silver linings in that. Well, if it wasn't wet, then, you know, whatever. So I think that's a cool idea. If people had more of that approach, I think you'd probably take much better care of land.
Well, you're not, like you said, you're not trying to squeeze. I mean,
if you grow peanuts. Not trying to squeeze it, you know, that's the thing. If you're taking care of it, you want it to be in better shape than it was when you got it.
Well, that's exactly right. And you know, peanuts grow well in South Georgia, and we're really good at peanuts, but we're also, peanuts just don't come up out of the soil naturally. We're squeezing the land to get the peanuts out. But what if you could just listen and react to what the land wants to do and enhance it? You know, what if you can help it move in the direction it wants to be, which is, I think naturally, if it has a little care, It wants to be. I'm almost profound. I'm trying to think of a better word than that.
Well, no, you're right on. It's like if it was a person and the person didn't like X, and you kept saying, well, you're gonna like. Say it's a band. No, you're gonna like the Black Crowes. Like, well, I don't like the Black Crowes. No, well, I'm gonna play Black Crowes till you do. Yeah, whatever. And eventually, the person, like the land, becomes resentful.
Yeah.
You know, and starts to like buck you on that. Like, I hate listening to Black Crowes, motherfucker. You know, just like the land starts to erode and
rotation, bro.
Yeah. And so it's more like you find things that work there. Like, this is what this piece of property, not you, but it's more like this piece of property is kind of what's in charge here. And it's saying, this does well here. This does well for me. I enjoy it. It's like me with pigs or me with it, certain vegetables, like corn. It loves corn.
Mm-hmm.
Other things, it just don't do well. Like field peas, for example, there's just way too much deer pressure. Not that they wouldn't grow, but the various things, you know what I'm saying? So I love the thought of like using the land as like a barometer of what it wants, what benefits it to.
Right. I think that's too. And I think it also, you know, it evolves. It's really interesting. I've never seen these red buckeyes come up until now. And so it's also interesting to see in terms of it almost in what the invisible capacity is. So, you know, how much does it need to be mowed? How much does it need to be grazed? What would fire do for it? You know, what is already there that's latent that still could be expressed?
That's right.
In the capacity. I think to me, I look at that land and I see all the possibilities, but the threats are the weeds, especially the invasives, the exotics and invasives are a real problem. And I mean, you know, this time next year, I'm really terrified to see what the thistle is going to look like. And the other thing is erosion. I mean,
but the invasive, that's a byproduct of that ecosystem being destroyed during reconstruction.
Yeah, right. And I think also I think if you did soil test and looked at, you know, mineral deficiencies, and not having, you know, I think the capacity of the land has been degraded, or the land has been degraded so that now it thrives on also some of these invasives. And especially stuff like thistle, which may not be so invasive, but also it can thrive in poor soil conditions.
Yeah.
And so I think part of it, you know, you do the land right if you make it better, because it also, it'll treat you right back. You know, it'll have less problems. But yeah.
You're worried about erosion?
Oh my God. All this land is, it is worked over old cotton land, and it is just, it has no topsoil to it. And it's pretty hilly, and the water just, it just cuts divots, or not culverts, everywhere. What's interesting, this is the last thing I'm gonna say about this piece of land, because we need to get off of this, is that the big industry before Opelika Auburn got big was it's in Alex City. It's Russell, like Russell Clothing.
Okay.
It's all based in Daveville. I mean, in Alex City, which is just up the road.
Like, so the Russell, like football helmets and stuff?
Yeah, Russell. I think it's now owned by Berkshire Hathaway.
Okay.
But they had big cotton mills, and they farmed. They had everybody was sharecropping or small farmers all around them, and they grew cotton, and they wore out the land, just wore it out. And then, of course, the Russells became really rich because they owned all this land, and then Alabama Power said, we're going to dam up the Tallapoosa River and make a lake here. And the Russells both got the money off the land, and they were able to speculate because they were able to trade for even like higher dollar land that became lakefront property. But also, they had a little power station down along the river, which was powering their cotton mill plant. And Alabama Power said, look, we need to flood this. And Russell said, well, we need our power. And Alabama Power said, I tell you what, if you give us this land and let us flood it, we'll just go ahead and supply you power for the next 50 years for free to your cotton mill. And Alabama Power never thought about, like, you know, you talk about a sweet deal for Russell. I mean, maybe it's why Russell became the Russell that you know today. It was not just a little local T-shirt manufacturer. It's because they had free power for 50 years or however long it was.
Damn, that's cool. You remember bike? Remember bike helmets?
Bike?
Yeah, back in the 80s, you would see bike. Like, Georgia players used to wear bike, B-I-K-E.
Remember British Knights? Let's see.
Ah, you remember British Knights? Yeah, heck yeah. Fila. Elise. I think that's how you pronounce it. Elise. British Knights. Reebok pumps.
Oh, man, I had some pumps, dude. They were the heaviest shoes I ever had in life. So heavy, dude. They were ugly and heavy. I got, like, you know, the cheapest ones. I convinced my parents to buy it for me.
Pump them up and dunk. Who was the guy that won the slam dunk competition?
Kenny Skywalker? Who was it?
Yeah, maybe, or Bugsy Bogues, or somebody back in the day. But remember, he bent down and pumped them up. It may have been Skywalker.
Ah, man, was it him? That'd be funny. How can I Google it? If I Google bike helmet, that does not come up, bro. I need to. Oh shit! You know where Kenny, bike brand?
You got to put him like bike brand or something. Who?
Kenny Skywalker's from Crawford County, Georgia.
Really?
Yeah.
I like that.
Isn't that exciting?
That's cool. Man, it's so good to talk to you. I've missed you so much. I can't believe we went so long. People have been asking. We seem to have a small but dedicated listener base. They've been asking. I get it every once in a while. When are y'all going to do a new Pulaski Hype barbecue? He just messaged me last night. I get it, you know. I'll think, like, dang, it has been a long time. And you think, well, we don't have much to talk about. But then, you know how it is. We start talking and come up with stuff.
I mean, we got a lot to talk about. It's just, do we talk
we
about
do. It? We do. We got to catch up, you know, and just figure, get one out there and then maybe get back in that groove. I mean, shit, I was at, shout out Sonia. Sonia's from Bronx. You'll love this. She's from Bronx, New York, right? So I'm delivering last week at one of my accounts on the island, Certified. There's a restaurant called Certified Burger, and then they have a sort of a ready-made meal store next door called Certified Pantry. It's owned by David Carrier. He's a super, super good guy, old school chef over there. But anyways, that's his niece. And so I'm delivering, and he's like, hey, my niece wants to come up here and get a picture made with you. She's a huge fan of Streak of Lean, and she wants to be a farmer. And so the girl's like 18 or 17 or something like this.
All right.
and really legitimately wanted to be a farmer. And it was awesome. Like, I talked to her for a minute and I was like, you know, you can come down, you could shadow, you know, but that's what I
or whoever, but there's various
like arms of agriculture that, you know, you probably pursue. It was really cool. And she said she liked the podcast.
Yeah. If she's really, really interested, I mean, I have work to reach out to beginning farmers that we could hook her up with some resources and some suggesting places to start.
Yeah, and I was telling her, it doesn't have to be like grassroots is cool, but it's an awful lot of work, and frankly, it's always teetering on the point of, you know, success and failure is a very thin line doing this type of farming. But agriculture is very broad. I was like, you know, there's forestry and there's stable things that people can do in agriculture that's not necessarily like, you know, like risking it all constantly. You know
what
I'm saying?
I would not recommend anybody getting the vegetable business full time.
I mean, I don't know. I always tell people like, yeah, I mean, it's tough, man. And I do livestock, so I'm even luckier than, like, vegetable. But still, like, yeah, you know. You got to be married to it on a level of, like, you almost got to become, like, so used to the ebb and flow of, like, being very high and being very low. And find some sort of meaning in that. Like, you could, one week, you're like, shit, yeah. Then 2 weeks later, you could be like, scrounging up some change for gas, you know, just waiting on some of these receivables, you know, or whatever. And it's like, that's, you know, sort of, you say that maybe embellishing, but I don't know, you know, there's point, you know, it does have very high highs and very low lows. And a lot of times you're not, the middle is elusive.
Yeah.
Like, that's what you want is the middle. But it's an elusive balance of finding and staying in the middle.
Well, I mean, you just don't. I mean, I just think you think about the way that your income works. I mean, it's not like you got a paycheck coming every 2 weeks that's dependable and you know exactly what it is. I mean, you're living, you know, you're. I was gonna say nature and everything else got you by the short curlies, but like you are. You're subject to a lot of outside forces that can affect, you know.
Yeah,
your success.
It can be cool. It can be a rush. Like I can't imagine doing anything else. But I've gotten very used to the high highs and low lows and the rush. I've pretty well accepted that I'm in it because I like to grow things for people to consume for health, and I believe in that. You know, even for myself. But I don't believe it to where it has to be all or nothing. Like, I'm not above going to McDonald's and getting a burger or getting a Big Mac if I'm, you know, just dying. But it's an ideal. It's a better way to me of producing food. But I also have accepted that I enjoy sort of the controlled chaos of it. And I like the challenge of the high highs and the low lows. Like, it makes me feel alive. And that's what I kind of like about it. You know what I'm saying? But that's also the thing that will destroy relationships. You know, everybody's not going to feel like that. And if you're married to somebody that doesn't feel like that, they're going to, and most people, you know, most people want a little bit more stability, and it will destroy things, you know, like a sickle through high weeds. Or people will wonder, you know, my own family, I have issues with, oh, well, why isn't he here on Thanksgiving? Or why isn't he going to be, oh, God, he's going to get up. Like my busiest 2 weeks of the year is Thanksgiving week with turkeys. And then between Christmas and New Year's that week, because of New Year's, they're huge. They're financially giant. But, you know, it's hard to get somebody in your family to understand like, oh, yeah, well, I'm coming up for Christmas and I'll be there, but I'm not going to get up there till like the 29th because I got to deliver, you know. And it's like, but everybody's got their rhythm, you know. Like if your job gets off for X, Y, and Z dates, but then your crazy season is I don't know, whatever, February. My February is more laid back. So, like, we all have our own rhythms, but it does sort of eat up things. Or, like we had my family down at St. Simon's for Thanksgiving, and I was still trying to deliver turkeys. Plus, you know, I got to wake up and go out and feed and water, you know, and it's like, that's sort of what you do. Because to me, I always try to explain it like, it's better for me to just do these menial chores that only take an hour. If I don't do them and I just roll the dice, it really can be a bad situation if something goes wrong. Mm-hmm. Like if I don't take an hour to go out here and feed and water and I get pigs out, it's not just like a dog running around, you know? I mean, yeah,
right,
it's going to be awful. They're going to destroy shit. Who knows what they're going to do? It's just going to be pandemonium, you know? And it's like, why? Why take that? Yeah, I think I came to that point after taking that risk so many times and it backfiring, you know? Like I did one time, I went to Disney World back in Reidsville and I left. Something happened with the water and I had a shitload of meat chickens die. Because something happened with the water. And it was like, you know, it's hard to live with yourself after that. And then also it's hard financially to, like, be okay with just, fuck it. Everybody else goes, I'm going. Like, it's like the land. Like, you got to work within the parameters of the job itself. That's the thing. This is the job. If this is the job, these are the parameters. If you can't live within these parameters, then you should not do this job.
Well, and I can see too, you know, from another party's viewpoint, you know, where's your commitment? You know, like, seems like you're committed to the land or to the farm, but it's also like, well, yeah, but that's also part of my commitment to the family because this is what brings us income.
Yeah. And it's hard if you're, you know, like, you use like Wendell Berry as an example, but if you really fall in love with a piece of property, it definitely, yeah. I mean, from my own personal experience, yes. I mean, but I grew up with that too. My dad was a football coach, so he was constantly working, you know, and I think a lot of occupations have that. Well, this is more important. And I don't look at it like that. Like, this is more important. I just look at it as this is the parameters of the job. And this is my job. And no, I don't want to give, I'm not giving my job up because of reasons that aren't my own. You know what I'm saying? So,
yeah.
So therefore, if I'm going to keep my job, if I want this job, then I have to work within these parameters. If that bothers you, I can completely understand that. That's what I've always said. That I totally get it. Trust me, I get it. I think that the crazy one in this equation is me, not you, because I'm the one that does this. But still, this is the parameters of my job. And being so, I will, you know, try to operate inside those. You know, I think of my kids often, you know, how you said, like, we never went out of town. And when we did, my dad slept a lot.
Yeah.
And like, they, you know, granted, it's a different world. And like, you know, when we were kids, nobody went to Mexico and nobody was like,
yeah, right. I know.
Like, I knew one kid, his dad was a mechanic for Delta. And so they went to Hawaii every year because they got free tickets or whatever. But it was like, man, you're going to Hawaii. Like, you ride in a plane. Like, I think I had ridden in a plane prior to adulthood. Like, it's raining here, Coop. Maybe like once or maybe twice. But it just wasn't that common. You know, usually the vacation back then was like, you go to the beach, you stay there for a few days or a week or whatever. But, you know, I think about my kids, like, I've never really taken them. They've gone places, but it's not been by me saying, hey, let's go. And that's something I resolved to get better at, because there is a treasure trove of adventures. You know, speaking of erosion, You know, we have things like Providence Canyon that are close, you know, in Georgia. You can go to the mountains, you can go to the beach. And so that's sort of the rhythm, too. But, yeah, undeniably farming, maybe that was just my own little, like, self-counseling session. But farming, you know, it can be that thing where people say, well, you love it more than you love me. Or, you know, you want that more than you want this.
Yeah, you know, and you go back to golly, I'm obviously conflicted about this because I don't want to elevate the profession of farming too high that it becomes kind of sacrosanct and full of shit.
That's but right. Also, we're like on Instagram, like when farmers post, like, this is what farmers do on vacation. Hashtag farmers go on vacation. As if everybody doesn't fucking do that. Like, what the fuck? Get over yourself.
I mean, if you want to, my relationship with Instagram right now is pretty much, I'm there for neat flowers and animals, and especially any Florida Panthers I can see. And I'm there just to hate. I'm over there just hating on small farmers.
I try to keep my feed very unfarmy.
I think it's healthier, bro. It's,
I purposely don't.
The Atlanta farming community.
Oh yes, I'm really over all that, and I'm done. I don't even get into the whole, like, I'm not interested in even really talking about anything other than just what makes me laugh or that I find mildly amusing. I'm not, and I'm just past the point. Like, I'm not going to be the guy that gets on there and is like, well, I do this in rotational grazing because blah, blah, blah. No, I'll be the guy that gets on there and talks about how I use billboard tarps to, like, basically build everything, you know?
Somehow we lost the point of Instagram when it was fun. It was take a fun picture from a neat perspective. We never thought of before. Make it fast. Do something small, witty, keep going.
Like, yes.
If you're sharing tweets, I ain't got time for that. All right. I mean,
I love a good caption. Like, I love to write. And I tell you, writing has helped me. It's never helped me directly with much money, but writing on Instagram has helped me. It's probably been the most meaningful way I've helped myself was actually opening up and writing captions on Instagram.
How do you write? Because I'm always curious because you seem to always be in the car or at the farm.
Yeah, I just do it on my phone. I post the picture and then I look at it, and I've usually thought about what I was going to write while I was working. So it really doesn't take, but I've had arguments where it's like, I'm taking care of the kids. You're sitting there writing a caption about a sunset.
All afternoon on that damn.
I'm saying, and I'm like, I'm sorry, but it just doesn't take that. You know, I'm not saying I'm good at it. What I'm saying is that it simply doesn't take very long. I've already.
You still there? I believe that's it.